Hello and welcome to the show. My guest today is Dr. Ken Achety, who is a movie producer. Ken, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for having me, and it's good to talk to you again.
Well, thank you. Now, you've got the handle or the branding of Story Merchant. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's somebody told me a long time ago that my ancestors were Phoenicians, and the Phoenicians are known for traveling all over the Middle East and you know, through the Mediterranean, you know, taking goods back and forth. But one thing they also took back and forth were stories. You know, they invented the alphabet that we use today, and I realized that that made me really feel good because my whole life had been spent finding stories, fixing them, making them better, and then taking them to market and finding somebody to buy them and turn them into books and films. And so that's where the whole idea came from, and that's why there's a sale in my logo on my website. And that's where the story came from. I've spent my life as a story merchant in the marketplace of stories, finding the right market for every story that that excites me, and that is my story, and I will stick to it.
Okay, no matter what anybody says, right? Now you're involved with both books and movies. Let's talk briefly about some of the work that you do with authors and helping to market them, and some of the projects you do.
Where do you want to start with that? That's kind of a general question that I'm not sure. I mean, yes, I've been working with authors all my life, and I sometimes authors are, their story is meant to be a book, and that's it, and sometimes it's meant to be a film, and that's it, and sometimes in my favorite cases, it's meant to be both, and we work to make it both.
Okay, now you've been producing up for a number of years. You've got 31 movie credits. You're both a producer and an executive producer. What do those terms mean? Because we hear them a lot, but do people really know what they mean?
Well, you know, people in the industry know what they mean, and if you're not in the industry, it's not the least bit surprising that you don't know what they mean, because they're very complicated terms. And just to give you one example, in the world of television, which I've worked in and sold stories to and produced stories in, the executive producer is the highest title that you can get, and the word, you know, the producer is a lower title. And in the world of film, you know, feature films, you know, for the theater, then the very opposite is the case. The producer is the highest title, and the executive producer is a lower title. And it's because of the function of different people in the different worlds. In the world of feature films and movies that go to the theater, the producer is the, I always say the way to describe a producer is the first one who turns the lights on in the morning and the last one who turns them off at night. He's the one who finds the project, develops it, finds the money for it, hires the director and the rest of the crew, and then produces the movie. And at the end of the day, he does the post-production of the film and the marketing of the film, and the oversees the distribution on behalf of the investors in the film. And he's basically, you know, that's who he is. That's the producer in a feature world. And the executive producer can be that position because he has helped raise the money, if not done the actual financing, or has brought a star into the movie, or has brought another major element into the movie. And so the role of the executive producer in the film business is a varied role depending on the exact situation. And when you see a bunch of executive producers listed on a movie, you can bet that each one of them has done something different for the movie.
That's interesting to know. I wasn't even aware of that myself. Now, as a producer, I mentioned before you've got 31 credits. Some of the movies that you've done for the audience out there, you did Life or Something Like It with Angelina Jolie and Edward Burns, Joe Somebody with Tim Allen, and Erased with Aaron Eckhart, who played Harvey Dent in The Dark Knight. Quite a variety, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I have a very broad taste in stories. I just like good stories. I come from a half-Cajun family that spent all of their time on the front porch telling stories, and, you know, whether they were horror stories or human stories or comic stories, you know, it was just the story itself that I love, and I'm still that way when it comes to projects. I have a wide taste in projects, and that explains the wide, you know, array of movies I've produced. And, you know, I have, what you're looking at is kind of the tip of the iceberg, because I have even many more movies in development around town and around the world, and they're also quite varied.
Now, how do you choose a script or a book to make a story out of? What makes a good story for Ken Atchity?
Well, it's a story that completely grabs your attention and holds it all the way through, and then gives you a payoff that's emotionally satisfying. And I always say great stories either entertain or at least educate. And so really it's that simple, and it can be on any kind of, I mean, there are certain subjects I'm not wild about, like I don't like drug movies, yet I was thoroughly riveted by Breaking Bad. And, you know, there are other drug movies that I was very impressed by, like Requiem for a Dream, even as depressing as it was. But I personally don't like them or haven't so far made a movie based on that subject matter. So that's one of my restrictions. And, you know, there are other things that I find very hard to get involved with, like a movie that's set entirely in a foreign country, unless that country happens to be either England or Italy, my favorite places outside
okay.
the U.S. But anyway, I try not to have restrictions. I try to keep an open mind, because I've spent a lifetime working with storytellers. I mean, my love is for storytellers and stories, because I believe stories change the world, and that the most important thing that human beings do is tell stories. And you know that if you follow politics. I mean, it's always a question of whose story do you believe? Do you believe Governor Christie's story, that he knew nothing about all of this, or do you believe the story of those who are attacking him, that he was well aware of it and that he's a bully? And what story you end up believing will determine the future of Governor Christie. That's what's how important it is. And if you're watching the Jody Arias trial or the O.J. Simpson trial, you know, the story that's being told by the prosecutor is one story, and the story told by her defense or his defense or is another story. Which story is the jury going to believe? It's all about just believing which story, and who's the better storyteller? And obviously, in the case of O.J., he had the bunch of attorneys who were better storytellers than the district attorney. And in the case of Jody Arias, no. The district attorney was telling a story that the jury believed. And so when you start looking closely at most human issues, stories are at the basis of it all. I mean, life, after all, is just a story. You know, Sophocles, the ancient storyteller, Greek tragedian, said, "Count no person happy until he is dead. The ending tells all." And unfortunately, the problem is we're not around after we're dead to figure out what our story was. So we make them up, and we make up the ending we want, and then we go sell it, and other people like it, and it inspires them to tell a better story for themselves.
Yeah, stories touch us on a very deep level, I guess almost a psychic level. There's something that's natural about storytelling. It's probably part of our DNA, I think.
Well, I really think it is. In fact, a book was written a long time ago about, I think it was called The 36 Plot Patterns,
mm-hmm.
and somebody noticed that, you know, 36 is also the number of strands in the double helix of our DNA, and I wouldn't be surprised, you know what I mean? That would make sense to me.
Yeah, I didn't know how profound I was, so I may use that
well,
one. I may use that again.
You're tapped into the essence of human nature there.
Yeah, very much so. Now, you deal with a lot of novelists in the course of your work. What are the odds of someone's novel becoming a film?
Well, honestly, the odds are not, you know, very high, considering the number of novels that are published. But the only attitude you should have if you're a writer, a novelist, is the odds do not apply to me. I mean, that is the only attitude you should have. I mean, if you're a statistician and a mathematician, you know, and that's the way you live your life, then you're in the wrong business, too, if you're a novelist. You don't want to be a novelist with that attitude. And so you really, you know, all I can do to help you is to tell you how you can better your odds of getting your novel turned into a film. And I've actually given workshops on that. Some of them are on the Internet. And the biggest thing you can do is to make sure your novel is structured like a film. That is, that it has three acts, you know, first act, second act, third act, and a definitive third act. And you'd be amazed at how many novels have a third act that sort of drifts off into nowhere, the way George Clooney's character drifts off in Gravity, and never can be a film because of that act. So that's one of the things you can do to better your odds. But you know, what makes a novel into a film is getting into the hands of a filmmaker who wants to make the story that you're telling. So completely unknown novels have also been made into films, and I myself have been responsible for getting them to that point, despite what their lack of reviews. You know, the obvious way to go is to get great reviews in the New York Times and New Yorker magazine, and or be on the New York Times bestseller list. Those are tremendous boosts, but you shouldn't give up if your novel isn't in either of those categories, as long as you construct it like a film and get it into the right hands. I even have a program as part of my company, Story Merchant Services, called Turning Writers into Filmmakers, where they can actually lead them through the whole path of becoming a filmmaker for those writers who have access to some funds and don't want to just send their book out hat in hand hoping somebody will see it and make it into a film. That's a pretty tough way to do it, although it's the way most people have to do it.
Yeah. Now, if someone wants to do that, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, I have a simple email address. It's atchety@storymerchant.com. And that's the easiest way.
Okay.
And the storymerchant.com is the website, and it has contact information on it as well.
Okay, great. Let's get back to the structure and storytelling through screenplay. We touched on structure. Any other secrets to a successful screenplay?
Well, there are many other secrets. I mean, the number one after structure is having a strong male lead. Because a strong male lead is what attracts a star to a movie. And without a star in your movie, your odds of ever getting the movie distributed are reduced by 99%. You would not believe how many movies are on the shelf never having been distributed because they simply did not have a star in the lead role. And it's for a very simple reason, especially in the United States. We're so saturated with entertainment choices that if we don't see a brand name on the movie, you know, starring Matthew McConaughey, you know, starring Helen DeGeneres, if we don't see a name we recognize on there, our odds of going to see it are very, very small. We just don't have time. And, you know, we may see it eventually on Netflix years later. And the good thing is that because of Netflix and the Internet, movies can last forever. But the chances of it getting to the screen in terms of a theater really depend on who's playing the main role.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a moment ago a strong male lead. Are we being sexist here, or just strictly being businessmen when we say strong male lead?
Yeah, well, that's it's a good thing you're asking that question, because I should have added that the reason for that is not, you know, macho male, you know, dominance at all. The reason for it is women. Women are the ones who watch the most television, by far. I mean, they're probably 80% of the television audience, and by far they buy the most movie tickets. They're probably 70% of the movie going. And because of that, and women want to see men in the lead roles. that's what makes them go to the theater, is because George Clooney's in this one or Brad Pitt is in this one. And if it's a guy that, like Brad Pitt, that men also like, that means the woman can drag her husband to the movies, you know, drag your boyfriend to the movies, et cetera. That's just the way it works. So it's a market response with male leads, and there are very few women. For, you know, every year there are more, which is very good news. People like Meryl Streep, who will get people into the theaters to see her latest movie. Sandra Bullock has certainly become that way. I mean, she virtually carried Gravity, but even then they felt they had to get a George Clooney into that kind of pathetic supporting role because it was really her movie all the way through. And there's an example of a woman breaking through. Julia Roberts is in that category. You know, so there may be 10 women as opposed to 30 or 40 or 50 men in that category that they can, what they call, carry a movie, meaning that people will invest in the movie just because she's playing the lead role. And women will go see her because they like her. You know, the other women, like Angelina Jolie, women do not particularly like Angelina Jolie because she is a challenge to, you know, everything about being a woman. She's so beautiful, she's so talented, she's so sexy, and believe it or not, she's just not the box office draw, unless she's playing an action figure where she will draw in younger people.
That's interesting to know. Because I always thought she was a big draw, but I never thought about it was the nature of the role she's playing. So good information there. Let's go back to structure, or screenplays, I should say. How tough is it to really write a good screenplay? You see books on it and formula and stuff like that. Is it tough or is it pretty easy?
You know, it is, of all the things that you can write, without question, the hardest thing to do. You know, writing a novel is very much easier than writing a screenplay there, because there's no kind of one way to write a novel. You can write it 5-6 different ways, but a screenplay has got to follow a pattern, with extremely rare exceptions, most of which never get made. So writing a screenplay is, just to give you one example of why it's so hard. You know, if you've got a scene in the front, in the opening of the movie, where the hero's in the back seat of a taxi and the taxi driver is wearing a red baseball cap, and the camera lingers so that you'll notice that the cap is red, and you don't do something with that, you don't have the red baseball cap reappearing later in the movie, what's going to happen is, after 2 hours of watching all this stuff going on, somebody's going to walk out there and go have a cup of, you know, beer afterwards with their friend, and they're going to say, "I just couldn't figure out why the camera stopped and looked at that red baseball cap. What was the point of that?" So unless it's important that the cap be red, then the screenwriter has got to not write a red baseball cap. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas the novelist is not going to think about things like that, or doesn't really have to think about things like that. Every single word in a screenplay, every single word is like a little bomb waiting to go off, and it's truly a technical precision, you know, creation to write a screenplay.
Yeah, one thing I found, I've adapted some novels for authors and reviews and screenplays for screenwriters, is that a lot of people don't seem to be able to understand that you can only write what is on the screen. You can't write any backstory, like John, who's been in love with Mary for 20 years. You can't do that. So it's much more difficult to portray information, for example. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. That's the art of writing a screenplay. All the things that you would say in a novel, just to set the scene, to give a sense of depth to the character, you have to find a way to show in words or actions. You can't put it into your what they call the narration of a screenplay. Because, you know, to say he's one of three brothers, blah, 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 you can't do that. Because if you're not going to show the other two brothers, then you either have to put it into dialogue or you don't put it down at all, because whoever reads that, the director, et cetera, is going to wonder, why is that there and what am I supposed to do about it? Because I can't see it and I can't hear it. So you can only put down what you can see and what you can hear. because that's what the audience does in the theater. They just see and hear, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, now, how many screenplays do you have to go through in order to find one that works?
Probably to find one that could work, if it were perfected, I could probably have to go through 15 or 20 screenplays. To find a great, perfect screenplay, you probably have to go through 1,000 screenplays. I mean, I'll never forget reading Hysteria for the first time and thinking, oh, my God, I have got to be involved in this movie. This is a perfect screenplay. I had no notes on it, and I spend my life giving notes on stories, and I had no notes. I mean, it was a perfect screenplay. And that is an experience that, is so rare that it doesn't happen more than once every 5 or 10 years. Yeah. I happen to be involved with another one right now called Padre by a writer named Mike Maples, and it, too, is virtually a perfect screenplay. I did have a couple of notes on it, but it was just so masterfully written, I could not wait to get involved and to do something about this movie because it was there on the page, reaching up and becoming alive in front of your eyes. And one of the things that you notice is that if you read a lot of screenplays, a bad screenplay takes hours to read. If you really have to read it all the way through, it can take you 4 hours or 5 hours. A good screenplay, you can read in an hour or under an hour, even though it's the same length of, pages.
Right.
Because it's so good, you just are, you're just turning the pages as fast as you can.
Well, that begs another question. The novelists are in love with their books, and they don't want anybody to, harm their babies or what have you. So should they write their own screenplays?
That to me is a recipe for disaster almost always. There are very few examples in history of successful screenplays by successful novelists based on their own work. One of them happens to be The Sound and the Fury by William Faulkner, which is the only good screenplay he wrote of his work, but which completely changes the way he told the story in the book. If you remember that novel, it was told from 5 different points of view, but he knew that wouldn't work as a movie, so he told it entirely from one point of view, and it worked. And it's such a rare example, such a rare thing for a writer to write a successful screenplay, that I would say you're really adding a massive handicap to you unless you have a very good script doctor who is at your side, working on the screenplay with you so that you end up with something good. And unless you are an incredibly disciplined person who doesn't feel he's got to include every single thing that he wrote in the novel, which is what the problem is with most novelists, they think they have to include every single thing.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think the word count on a screenplay is about 20,000 to 25,000 words, and novels are, 80,000, 100,000 or more words. You do the math, and it's not going to work out.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah,
I'm surprised that screenplays are even that many words because, the fewer words in a screenplay, the better the screenplay.
Yeah, probably so. Well, say you've got a screenplay, you believe in it. How do you get in front of the right people?
Well, you have to get it to a director first. You have to get it to, if you're just trying to sell it, you have to get it to a representative. And it's a long story to get it to those people, but you fortunately with the internet gives you all kinds of guidance on that, and our website, several of my websites are all about that, but basically those are the two routes. You get it to a director, you get it to a representative.
Oh, to a director, Ken, so make sure I understand, not a producer, but get it to a director?
If you can get it to a producer, great, but very few writers have relationships with real, producers who produce movies. I mean, everybody who lives next door is a producer, but how many people have credits on IMDb? You know what I mean? So,
right.
If you find, the right, like Arnold Riskin or, John Wells, if you can get to somebody like that, but what are the odds of you doing that if you're living in, Iowa or Mississippi or North Carolina? So usually the best, and there is a book, The Creative Directory, that lets you
gives you a stab at that. You could list producers and directors and all of that. But that's why mostly writers get things to representatives, or in rare cases, they simply decide to become proactive, become their own producer, make the film themselves. That's what one of our programs is all about in Story Merchant, helping people do that.
Okay, so we've gotten into a director or hopefully a producer or what have you. What's the market like today? Is it is there lots of openings? Is it a lot tighter? What do you think?
Well, it's enormously tighter than it was 5 years ago when it comes to the big studios that used to pay a fortune for scripts. I've sold scripts for $1 million, $1.2 million, $1.6 million, and that rarely happens, not more than once a year per studio in today's world, where it was happening 10 times a year per studio 5 to 10 years ago. But the good news to compensate for that is that more indie movies are being made than ever before by independents. The only problem with that is they don't have the money to develop scripts and to pay a lot of money for scripts. So the payoff comes when the movie starts getting produced and there's actually money, production money, to pay for the screenplay. So the world has changed, which is all the more reason for having a good representative or becoming more proactive with your own fate if you're a screenwriter.
Excellent. So, Ken, lots of great advice. I appreciate you being on the show. Tell people again how to reach you.
The best way is just Atchity, A-T-C-H-I-T-Y, at storymerchant.com, and or look at the Story Merchant website. I offer a free phone consultation to figure out where you are in your career, to see what one of our services might work for you if you go through storymerchant.com. And so it's pretty easy.
Fantastic. Ken, thank you so much for the information and the advice. Thank you for being on the show, and I hope you'll join us again.
Thanks, Dan. And, it was a pleasure, and I wish everybody the best. And my advice to you is never give up, never give up, never give up.
Give us that advice one more time in case we didn't hear it.
Never give up, never give up, never give up, as Churchill said to the Allies during the war.
That's right. Hey, Ken, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Dan. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.